This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Back in on the drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. 610 Sports Radio, the official broadcast partner of the Kansas City Chiefs. Coming up in 30 minutes, we'll be joined by Terrez Paylor of Yahoo Sports. Yesterday, he could not come on the show because he was doing something like voting for the Hall of Fame. Today, he is a lot more free than he was yesterday. Terrez will be on the show coming up in 30 minutes. In 15 minutes, we will take a journey, a trip, a voyage inside the mind of the machine. Before we do that, I remember at the beginning of the playoffs, you made a list of the players you would be fearful of the Kansas City Chiefs playing in a playoff environment. Correct me if I'm wrong. Josh Allen was not on the list. Josh Allen this season has accounted for almost 5,000 yards. He threw for 37 touchdowns this year. If you want to add the rushing touchdowns, you can add 8 on top of that. Is Josh Allen a quarterback or a player that you are afraid of heading into Sunday's matchup?
I don't remember if he was on that list. If he wasn't, he probably should have been. I wouldn't say I'm scared of him. I think that we've seen, as Chiefs fans, the Chiefs go up against Josh Allen head-to-head, and he played the worst game of his season. I mean, he was not good at all against the Chiefs the first time around. He had 2 touchdowns. He had 1 interception. He completed half his passes at 122 yards. I'm not just looking at that game in a vacuum, though, because I realize since that game, he's been as good as any quarterback in the NFL. And I think we got really sold on this early on. We talked a lot about Russell Wilson winning the MVP, and then it became Patrick Mahomes, then it became Aaron Rodgers. And we never talked about the guy that was really in the conversation the entire time that turned it on toward the end of the season, and that's Josh Allen. So I don't really think, like I said earlier, see that you can take a lot away from the first matchup where the Chiefs dominated Josh Allen or what he did last year, because the truth is the Chiefs are facing a completely different guy. And you know, I have no problem talking smack on young AFC quarterbacks. I'm not the biggest fan of Deshaun Watson. I'm not the biggest fan of Lamar Jackson or some of these other guys. When it comes to Josh Allen, I'm sold. I think that he's got all the traits, the big arm, the head. He's accurate. He does all the things that I think are going to lead to him not just winning a Super Bowl eventually, but he's going to be Pat's nemesis probably for the next decade.
That's interesting that you say that, because he's played at a really, really high level. Like, I think it's fair to say that this version of Josh Allen that they're going to play is the best quarterback that they've played so far this season.
I agree.
Better than Josh Allen was earlier this season. I know Lamar was just coming off an NFL MVP, but now we know Lamar didn't have that dynamic season that he had a year ago. This is a really strong quarterback group. This is a really strong wide receiver group with Stephon Diggs. Cole Beasley was the second team all-pro guy this year. It's hard for me to think a team that was as one-dimensional as the Bills were last week is a team that can really give this defense trouble. I'm not saying that Buffalo won't be able to move the ball or score against them. I don't want to put too much stock into the Ravens where the offense really struggled. But to me, the interesting thing was they showed absolutely no commitment to running the football. Was that fear of Baltimore's rush defense that we saw against Derrick Henry do a really good job? Or is Buffalo just saying, hey, we're riding Josh Allen to the Super Bowl here. We're going to try to throw the ball 40, 45 times against Kansas City, and we think that's our best avenue and path to going to the Super Bowl? Because if that's the case, I think that plays right into what Kansas City wants them to do. I'm not saying you got to run the ball for 200 yards against Kansas City to beat them, but this defense has certainly shown us enough stability and enough trust. You got to be balanced. And last week against Baltimore, you didn't see any of that balance from the Bills.
Yeah, because, well, Cleveland, for whatever reason, decided to throw the football, not run the football. They really weren't all that balanced. And I said going into the week that they need to run and run and run some more, and they didn't do that. It's the opposite approach this week with Buffalo. Running is not their strength. Throwing is. They can really toss the football around, as you mentioned. Nobody talks about Cole Beasley. We don't even talk about Cole Beasley unless we're playing his rap. But Stephon Diggs, my goodness. You want to talk about a team adding a wide receiver and all of a sudden that being the missing link? Most of the time, you add a stud on defense or a quarterback or sometimes a running back and they have that type of an impact. I can't remember this side of Randy Moss going to the Patriots, a wide receiver switching teams and having an instant impact of becoming not just maybe the best pass catcher in the league. Stephon Diggs, most yards in the regular season, 1,535. Most yards in the postseason, 245. Stephon Diggs and Buffalo and Josh Allen, for whatever reason, has been a perfect marriage.
I got a lot of respect for Cole Beasley. I understand that he's not the star the way that Diggs was. Diggs played like a top five wide receiver in the league. I think you'll like this. I think Cole Beasley is what people envision Sammy Watkins to be whenever they sign the contract. Like this year, Cole Beasley, now touchdown numbers weren't there, but he's not really that kind of guy. And I know you're big on guys that put up touchdown numbers.
I do like touchdowns.
82 catches, almost 1,000 yards. He had almost 12 yards a catch. He's playing in the slot. So playing that complementary football alongside Stephon Diggs, who is going to be a big touchdown guy, who is going to get the big down the field numbers. Cole Beasley this year was the best slot receiver in the NFL. So I got all respect for Cole Beasley in this game. Diggs didn't play incredibly well in this game. He had 62 yards receiving. Beasley only had 40 yards in this game. But that's going to happen when your quarterback only throws for 122 yards. Yeah. Guys aren't really going to have big days. But I don't want anybody to think because Diggs gets the spotlight and the shine, that's any knock on Cole Beasley. Beasley was the best slot receiver in the league.
I actually think that Beasley might be a bigger problem for the Chiefs on Sunday night than Stephon Diggs. And don't get it twisted. I know Stephon Diggs is a better wide receiver. Hell, he might be the best wide receiver in the league. But I also think that the Chiefs have, I don't know if it's just going to be, all right, LJ Snead, you go out there and do what you can against Stephon Diggs. We'll shade a safety over to his side as often as we can. And there's going to be one-on-one coverage with Cole Beasley. Who is that guy? Because the Chiefs secondary, I've got enough confidence in, but I'm not going to pretend like it's Sean Taylor and Ed Reed back there. And this Buffalo team has not just one, but they got a couple of frontline pass catchers where I think that could be a problem. Like, I think that Josh Allen, for a guy that put up 125 yards the first time they played, I bet he throws for closer to 325 yards coming up on Sunday.
Coming up in a little bit, we'll take a trip inside the mind of the machine. You bring up Stephon Diggs. That leads us to a toss-up question. Hit it, Rob. Who do you think is the best pass catcher on the field Sunday? Is it Stephon Diggs, Travis Kelce, or Tyreek Hill?
You didn't think I was going to say Stephon Diggs, did you? I think that it's probably Travis Kelce. Whenever we come down to these questions, I always think, what's the gap between him and the next guy? So if you still tell me that Stephon Diggs is better than Tyreek Hill, or if I can make an argument for the next couple of minutes that I would take Tyreek Hill over Stephon Diggs, that's fine. I mean, you're really splitting hairs there. With Travis Kelce, he's the best tight end in the league by far. Because next year, it might be Darren Waller, it might be Zach Ertz, it might be somebody that we're not talking about who's the second best tight end. But at the top, it's going to be Travis Kelce again. He's in his prime and he's putting up numbers. And frankly, he's unstoppable. It doesn't really matter what you do. He's kind of like a Kevin Durant on the basketball court where he's too tall for anybody. There's no reason he'd be shooting threes, but also if he goes down low, you can't stop him. How do you defend him? So I would say of these three guys, which are all impossible to defend, the most difficult is still Travis Kelce.
Yeah, I agree. I would pick Kelce out of this too. I thought Kelce was probably, if we're taking away position, I think he was the best pass catcher this year in the NFL. I mean, Diggs was a top four receiver this year in the league. So was Tyreek Hill. We're talking about two guys that were first team all pro this season. So guys had fantastic seasons. I'd probably rank it Kelce one, Hill two, Diggs three. I think that Diggs is probably a little better route runner than Tyreek Hill, but the speed and versatility, especially being able to help you in the run game, would probably lead me to pick Hill over Stephon Diggs. But I will say this. Diggs was a lot better than I thought he was.
Oh, yeah.
I thought Diggs was a strong two. And there's nothing wrong with being a strong two, but that's what I thought Diggs was. I thought Thielen was a true number one receiver, and Diggs was probably the 19th best receiver in the NFL, just was in a really good spot. Diggs really stepped up this year. He really proved to be one of the top 10 guys in the league this year, stepping up and being a one. But you also got to give Buffalo a lot of credit for putting guys around him as well. You couldn't put too much attention on him with Cole Beasley underneath in the middle of the field.
He didn't exactly come out of nowhere. So he had 102 catches and 1,000 yards and 9 touchdowns in 2018. That was the Minnesota Miracle year. And then the next year, he had 6 more touchdowns and 1,100 yards. And then, like I was saying, just a perfect fit, a perfect marriage once he got there to Buffalo with Josh Allen. 127 catches. 127 catches, 1,535 yards, and like you said, C-Dot, he had 8 touchdowns. So if you want to argue that he's the best wide receiver in the league, I'm not going to put up too much of a fight, but if you said I could take him or Travis Kelce, you know I'm taking.
Coming up next, we'll take a journey, a voyage inside the mind of the machine. Keep it locked right here on 610 Sports Radio, the official broadcast partner of the Kansas City Chiefs.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll be joined by Therese Paylor of Yahoo Sports, one of the top NFL writers in the country. He also has a Hall of Fame vote. He will be on the show coming up in about 15 minutes. You're listening to 610 Sports Radio, the official broadcast partner of the Kansas City Chiefs. But before we catch up with Therese, let's take a trip, a journey inside the mind of the machine.
Look, man, I know he got hurt in the game and all, but are you ready to admit that Lamar Jackson is anti-clutch when it comes to the big game?
Lamar Jackson is 24 years old. No, okay. I'm not even there. Not even kind of there with it. Not even a little bit.
I'm all the way there. Lamar Jackson, I mean, at some point, maybe in the next couple of years, makes it to an AFC Championship game, falls into one or something like that. He will never play in a Super Bowl, and he will sure as hell never win a Super Bowl. No way.
Somehow you like Baker Mayfield this month more than Lamar Jackson. I'm so confused.
I don't think either one of them will do that. I think they're both average NFL quarterbacks 2 or 3 years from now. I think that Lamar Jackson had his career season a year ago. And if I was Baltimore, I mean, I don't know if I would for sure give him long-term money. Not only can he not win the big game, but the style that he plays. You want to sign that guy up for 5 or 6 years? Go ahead. As a Chiefs fan, I welcome that. I would love that.
Yeah, I don't think you really have a choice. I would happily sign Lamar Jackson to a contract here this offseason. I think they are going to sign him to a deal. Now, I'm curious to see what that deal is going to look like, but, I mean, I'd sign him to Jared Goff's contract, and I feel pretty comfortable with it.
We talked yesterday about the guy living at O'Hare Airport for 3 months. Do you have a favorite airport?
I mean, I don't really think that much about it. Like, I'm not really there for all the amenities. Like, I'm just there to kind of get on my flight and head back to the crib.
At some point, though, you've been delayed, and you're like, oh, this is pretty dope.
Denver's airport's probably my favorite. But, yeah, I mean, that's just – I mean, I honestly don't really think that much about it. Like, I don't really care about all those amenities. Like, that's not a really place. Like, if you got to spend extra time there, you're not spending it because you want to or because you're happy to be there.
Have you ever been stuck at Kansas City's airport?
Yeah, but
I wish there was stuff to do.
Yeah, I just sit by the charger and just make sure my phone. Like, the couple times I've been there before, it's not as bad as people make it seem like it is. But I understand, like, I have been in a situation where I was hungry at KCI and sucks. I didn't really have a whole lot of options there.
Denver Airport's got that big, weird horse out there with the red eyes on the runway. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the hell that thing's all about, but it's there.
I liked New Orleans Airport. I thought it was pretty nice, but, I mean, I really wasn't in there for that long.
Tonight, I'm going to enjoy a delicious meal at a very fine, fine restaurant known as Texas Roadhouse. I love the steaks at Texas Roadhouse. I don't care that it's not the most expensive place. What's your favorite steak in Kansas City?
I mean, ones that I go to consistently, I would say Herford House just because it kind of fits in that price range. But, I mean, if you're really trying to have yourself a nice meal, 801 Chop House is just – I mean, it was fantastic. The two times I've been was just – great meals, amazing meals, but the way my bank account is set up, like, I'm not out here trying to do all that.
If I didn't love my girlfriend, like, if we were to the point where we've known each other for a long time now, I don't think that we're going to Texas Roadhouse. I think I'm probably trying to impress her, but now that we're at the point in relationship we are, we're just super real with each other. There's a lot of Texas Roadhouse trips. It's not bad at all. Not expensive.
I just can't really imagine.
Food,
like, I just can't imagine at this
service.
Point, like, in my life, where I'm, like, counting down the days. You know, like, when you're, like, really excited to get off work because you got to do something?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I just can't imagine, like, being excited to get off work to go to Texas Roadhouse.
Oh, that's
to go
me
eat,
tonight.
You know? I just can't. I mean, everybody's different. I'm not here putting anybody down.
Porterhouse.
That's your journey. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's your journey. I just, if that's the case, I'd rather just eat at home.
I'll knock until you've tried it.
I've had Texas Roadhouse before, and that's how I know that's not a place I'd be really excited to go to afterward.
Speaking of food, celebrity birthday time, how old is Guy Fieri today? Remember when Joel Goldberg accidentally interviewed the guy that he thought was Guy Fieri at the Royals game?
I don't remember this, actually.
Rob, you remember that?
Yeah, it was so great.
Dude, I watched the video earlier today. It went for 5.5 minutes. How could nobody be in Joel Goldberg's ear like, Just so you know, that blonde-haired goatee gentleman is absolutely not the Food Network guy. Anyway, how old's Guy Fieri?
Mayor of Flavortown. 55.
I'm going to go a little older than that, 58.
He's 53.
Mm.
How old is former Chiefs quarterback Nick Foles?
34.
Trying to do the math. I think he was in the 14 draft, right? So 14. I'm going to say he's 31.
He's 32. Where'd he go to college?
Arizona. Bear down.
He did go to Arizona.
Dwight from The Office. It's his birthday, too. How old is he?
I'm not going to lie to you. I don't know which one Dwight is.
He's the glasses, kind of annoying assistant.
Have you ever seen The Meg?
I don't know who Meg is.
The Meg, the one with the giant shark.
Still don't know who Meg is.
I'll say Dwight is 52.
It's not a person. Isn't Meg short for Megalodon?
Yeah, the Megalodon. Actually, that movie was on last night. I had Mizzou on one TV and that on the other.
The only Meg I know is the Stallion.
Why would you watch either one of those things, Megalodon or MU basketball?
I was interested in Mizzou basketball. Jeremiah Tillman hooping.
Don't get C-Dot going. Did you give me an age? He's 55. I don't know who got that one.
Nailed it. I said 52.
That a boy, Rob. Earlier today.
I can't wait when Sean picks Missouri to lose their first game in the tournament, although he hadn't watched Missouri play a game all this year. It's going to be a great show.
The CBI? I don't usually pick who wins or loses in the CBI.
They're actually going to make the real tournament, the big tournament. The same tournament as Kansas this year.
Is that right?
Remember when I said they could be a 5 seed and I was scoffed at by
you? I did laugh at you when you said could they be a 5 seed. Joe Lunardi in his most recent bracketology had them as a 5 seed.
It's almost like I know what I'm doing, huh?
When they started to have that mini slip, I will say I got some satisfaction out of it, but they seem to have gotten the train right back on the tracks. Earlier today, I gave you my 10 favorite places to get buffalo wings in Kansas City. What else can you put buffalo sauce on besides chicken and shrimp? Do people put buffalo sauce on other things? 913-576-7610. Pizza?
Yeah. Have you never had a buffalo chicken pizza? It's fantastic.
No, I have not.
This might come as a very unpopular opinion. Buffalo sauce, a little overrated.
I completely disagree. I think it's incredibly underrated, and I think that it should be up there with ranch when it comes to condiments that everybody uses on a daily basis. You could dip everything in, as far as I'm concerned. Add a little flavor to it. I'll take saltines. Well, I should say past tense. When I was super poor, you get some of the best buffalo sauce in town. You're going to laugh at this. McDonald's. You ever had it? Super thick. Don't roll your eyes at me. Super thick, super flavorful, super free. You just drive through. Pretend like you got something. Tell them you forgot your buffalo sauce. Get a couple of buffalo sauces. Go somewhere, get some saltine crackers, and then dip it in the buffalo sauce. I did that in college a million times. It's better than ramen noodles. You're going to tell me, oh, I'd make all these concoctions with ramen noodles. Saltine crackers and McDonald's buffalo sauce is where it's at. No? Maybe? Okay. Exchange shit.
I would have been selling drugs in college as opposed to what you were doing. Like, I legitimately would have been out here selling crack. Like, if it came down to me out here on this corner in Joplin, Missouri, moving weight or eating saltine crackers with McDonald's buffalo sauce, I would have been a kingpin. I'd have been Big Meech, Larry Hoover, whipping work. Hallelujah. It was never that hard in college. I mean, I like making it seem like I was out here balling, but goodness gracious, I always had enough to get a McDouble from the McDonald's drive-thru. Goodness gracious.
Oh, no, that's probably,
this is next level,
dog,
poverty.
That's not even the worst that I've had.
This is next level.
I'm not saying I've eaten out of a trash can or anything in college, but I'm a half a step up from that.
We could tell, we just heard you were eating Ritz crackers and buffalo sauce from a fast food restaurant.
Dude, at some point in college, you're in the dorm room. You're either lazy or broke or both. And you just kind of make.
I don't know what y'all was doing, man.
All right, that's what you do.
I was out here breaking all the copyright laws. I was selling DVDs, CDs. I was doing whatever necessary.
Yeah, I was just starving, but living legal.
I was broke one semester in college, and I realized that was not fun.
You know,
I realized that was not fun in the least bit.
You were broke for a semester.
For
in
a
college?
Semester, and I went back that Christmas break, and I started working. I was like, bro, I refuse to be hungry here.
The only people that I know that made money in college were the weed people.
Well.
You made money in college?
I
was so broke.
I worked 3 jobs. I was not playing, bro. Being broke was never fun.
Actually, in Lawrence, I did work at...
You couldn't take girls nowhere when you was broke? Like, no, that was not for me at all.
Do you remember Family Video?
I do remember Family Video.
I think they just went down. I think COVID might have gotten Family Video. I worked at the one in Lawrence, Rob. Remember 6th Street? It was like the sad version.
Yeah, I lived
over
on 6th Street.
It's like the sad version of 23rd Street.
I lived on 6th.
Anyway, I worked at the Family Video over there. You want to talk about a great section of adult films is the word that I'm looking for. Unbelievable.
That Family Video was gone long before
was
the Rona.
It?
At least in Lawrence. That Phelan video was gone. It was like the Rona didn't get Blockbuster either. Blockbuster was out of here before that.
Blockbuster. Blockbuster's been gone for a decade.
We had a Hastings where I was at. That's a dark thing.
We had those in Lawrence too.
We had Hastings.
I'm pretty sure those are gone too. Anyway, speaking of gone, Exchange City. Rob, did you go to Exchange City as a kid?
I did go to Exchange City.
What were you?
I was the banker, so they nailed it.
About right. I was the DJ. What? They nailed it. Anyway, apparently Exchange City is gone, but there's this new place that they're opening up, or it might already be there, called BizTown. C-Dot, you want to do the show from BizTown?
I got no bro. No interest in
doing you're still
that.
Pissed off you didn't get to go to Exchange City,
no,
huh?
I'm not even mad about that at all.
He grew up on the Missouri side, this guy.
I'm not mad about that at all.
He had to go on them crappy field trips. Where'd you guys go? Jeff City?
We went to Jeff City.
Jeff City's Topeka. It's the same.
It's the same bad for a field trip.
It's the same field trip.
We went to the American Royal. We saw.
We did that too.
Christmas Carol. Yeah,
We saw the Nutcracker.
Coterie.
I'm an adult that makes money. I don't go on vacation. I don't go on field trips. We take vacations. So if you want to take a vacation.
You got a kid. You'll be a volunteer on one of these one day.
Oh, yeah, that's different. But I'm not trying to just – I don't have any interest in going to Fun City or wherever that's
Exchange City is what it was called. Thank you very much. And as often as I talk about Tippins and how much I miss their chicken noodle soup and French silk pie from the actual restaurant, Exchange City might be the place that I wish they brought back. I'd move in there. I'm not joking. If they let me pay rent, I would. And you've made it outside the mind of the machine, brought to you by 7th Street Casino. 7th Street Casino is where it's at.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Therese Paylor of Yahoo Sports, one of the top NFL reporters in the country. Therese Paylor will join us next. Bills Game Week is brought to you by Rainer Garage Doors of Kansas City. That's next. Stick around us to drive on 610 Sports Radio, the official broadcast partner of the Kansas City Chiefs.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6. He's the man that created the all-juice team.
I watch a lot of football, guys. Every week, hours of it. I took notes on every game.
You can find his work over at Yahoo Sports.
The Chiefs are just a great football team, man.
And he joins us every Tuesday at 3:30 and Thursday at 8:30.
Watch him. He was unbelievable.
Here's 610 Sports Radio's NFL insider, Therese Paylor.
Back in on the drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. 610 Sports Radio, the official broadcast partner of the Kansas City Chiefs. Let's head to the phone lines right now, be joined by one of my favorite guests. His name is Therese Paylor. He is one of the best NFL reporters, one of the best NFL writers, also one of the best NFL podcasters. He does amazing work for Yahoo Sports. He's also a Hall of Fame voter. Therese, how's it going today?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing good. Let's start with the top story in the NFL is the health and status of Patrick Mahomes. You're as plugged into this organization as any. What are you hearing about the Chiefs quarterback?
I think people around him, I think people around the team are generally pretty optimistic he's going to be ready to go. I reported yesterday that, pretty good chance he's going to end up practicing, and then today – he was limited. So, it looks like he's in, 3, 4, 5 stage of the protocol. As long as things went okay with him today, he is on track to be ready to play Sunday. But, you still always have to be a little cautious. And that's why I'm generally like really cautious with the injury stuff. My years covering this league, this is my 8th year doing it now. Like you kind of never know when things can go backwards. So I'm pretty careful and I'll always be that. But, in general, I do think, and I think you've heard this too, people are pretty optimistic about his ability to play on Sunday. And I also think one more thing is important to remember is, the people around him, since he's been drafted here, all I've heard is, Patrick is a warrior. Patrick really, he's unique in the sense that he's resilient physically, right? He's got mental toughness. He can play through stuff. And I think, especially as it relates to the toe, that's going to play a role here on Sunday. The last guy who'd want to sit out this game is Patrick Mahomes. And, it would take a lot, I think, to keep him from doing it, though. Nothing is guaranteed.
So, Therese, you bring up the toe for Mahomes. There's no chance he's 100%. He clears the concussion protocol. He goes out there. But just given his toe and his foot injury, he's going to be limited to some aspect. Do you have any concerns about what he can physically do? Because he's a guy that he's not a running quarterback by any means, but he's certainly mobile, can use his legs, and also can evade the rush. Are you worried about some of the things he physically will be able to do against Buffalo's defense?
That's a great question, man, because they know that too, right? And there's things that you can do as a defense when you know the quarterback is struggling to move a little bit. You know, for instance, bring pressure from the left side. You know, if it's his right toe, you bring pressure from the left side, make him run on that and go to that side. Consequently, if it's his left toe, you bring pressure from the right side. You understand? So I would actually expect Buffalo to pressure him in a way they wouldn't early on. They've got to see what this guy has. You know, they got to see if he's mobile, because that's going to help them call plays the rest of the game. They got to see if this is really Patrick, because if it's really Patrick, then they'll settle back into the zone stuff. You know, they'll settle back into the rush four play, you know, split safety, you know, zone. They'll do that. But if he can't move, and he's still really good, but if he can't move, there might be a chance to actually pressure him and blitz him and get after him and create some plays, which you ordinarily could never do. I mean, he's one of a few quarterbacks you just generally shouldn't blitz, along with Josh Allen and, you know, some other guys. So, I think there's some things the Chiefs can do, you know, to help prepare them for this. Like, you can outfit his shoe. I mean, you can shoot it up. Like, there's things you can do where he'll be feeling okay in the game. But that still doesn't mean it won't come out when he's forced to run around and scramble and stuff. And we can't forget that in the playoffs, his legs have been a weapon. He's really used those. He's used them to make teams pay when blitzing. He's used them to make teams play when dropping into coverage. And it's really the thing that's made him indefensible. So if he plays and his mobility is limited in any way, I expect Buffalo to know that early on. And the pass game has got to really be on point. Everybody's going to have to pick it up in the pass game then.
Therese, you study and know the draft as much as anybody that we talk to. You got the All Juice team. When you watch Josh Allen, what ceiling did you see for him? Because I thought that he was going to be sort of Cam Newton light based on what we saw the last 2 years for him at Buffalo. But this year, he's turned into one of the top five throwers of the football in the league, and I don't think there was any reason to think that from him based on what we saw his first 2 years.
Yeah, no, I hear you, man. And you know, I think the Cam Newton comp was a good one. And I mean, honestly, it was a fair one, you know. You know, Brandon Bean, their general manager, was in Carolina with Cam Newton. And I talked to him about this. Like, he didn't like comparing him to Cam, but, like, he acknowledged that there were some similarities, you know. So don't feel bad. Like, we all messed that part of it up. Josh Allen's development as a passer has been one of the most remarkable stories in football. And if you don't mind, I'll plug the fact that my next Check the Tape is on that. And I think a big reason is on Brian Daboll, their offensive coordinator for the last 3 years. You know, it speaks to the importance of continuity between the head coach, between the offensive coordinator and the quarterback. And also, like, one thing I think everyone underestimated about Josh Allen, and I didn't fully understood till I got in front of him and talked to him at length for a couple times. You got to trust me. Like, I'm not, you know, I don't just say this guy loves football. I don't just throw that around. Like, I think you guys know me by now. Like, I use that for the guys I really believe that in, you know, the dogs or whatever. And I tell you, Josh loves football a lot, because you can just see it. It just radiates off him, right? But B, you don't improve the way he has as a passer over 3 years unless you really love the game and are, like, you know, living it, eating it, sleeping it. I mean, this guy has improved his mental processing on the field. He's improved his accuracy. He's improved his mechanics. And while those things are not impossible to get better at, they're hard to get better at quarterback, especially as quickly as he has. So, you know, nothing but respect for Josh Allen. You know, I think he's gotten good coaching, and he's got a great infrastructure in Buffalo. Those guys know how to build a team. But a big reason for this also is because that guy honestly really, really cares about being great. And that's why my focus when I try to pick the All Juice team, or when I try to co-sign on players, is to find guys that love it. Because when you love it and you're passionate about something, and no matter what industry, whether that's journalism or radio or football or whatever, if you love it and you're passionate about it, people are going to see it. And more often than not, you're going to reach your ability. And I think we're seeing that with Josh Allen.
I agree with everything, Therese, you just said about Josh Allen and his improvement and why he's at the point that he is, but I feel like you might have missed the biggest thing, which is Stephon Diggs. Wasn't that just the perfect relationship to get him in the offseason?
No, he's been fantastic. And, you know, in my defense, I mentioned it in the column that's about to come out, man. Yeah. Like, you know, Diggs is a beast. Diggs is a stud. And I think Diggs is a reminder that sometimes when guys are complaining about targets and when they're complaining about their role in offense, like sometimes it's not just being selfish. Just like sometimes it's like you know what you can accomplish. And these guys really work too hard not to like see like what they could be if given the opportunity. Do you know what I mean? Like it was like Kobe had to get, you know, what was that, 2005, 2006, those years when he was jacking like 30 shots a game.
Yeah.
I think he just needed to get that out of his system. Like just to show people, hey, this is what I got. You know, this is my legacy. This is how good I am. He just had to get it out of his system, you know. And I think Diggs is a really great example of that. Man, you guys are giving me column ideas. You know, Diggs is really a great example of that. Like sometimes these guys know what they're capable of and they work too doggone hard not to show it. He has been unbelievable, not coverable one-on-one with most corners. And I think the thing I like the most is that him and Allen have like a real connection, man. And here's how good Diggs has been. No one complains about the fact that they basically traded Justin Jefferson for him, and Justin Jefferson's a stud. So Buffalo is a great example of how to build a football team, and you will see teams in the next 2 to 3 years try to emulate the way they've done it. They will try to emulate that blueprint.
Oh, the Bills are going to be a problem on Sunday, and they're going to be a problem for a while. We're talking with Therese Paylor here on the drive. You said a couple of things that kind of caught my attention. You talked about uncoverable and legacy, which makes me think about Tyreek Hill, and while we're at it, let's talk about the Honey Badger. As a guy that has an actual Hall of Fame vote, how much do you think the next couple of games are going to impact whether those guys ultimately end up in Canton? Because to me, see, I differ a little bit on this. I think both those guys are borderline, and I would say that Tyrann Mathieu might be like 55-45 now that he's got a ring.
Who was the first one you cut out?
Tyreek Hill. I was asking about Tyreek Hill.
Okay, Ty?
Yeah.
Okay. So where does Carrington come out on this?
I'm looking at Tyrann Mathieu. To me, I would say that it's probably more likely that he makes the Hall of Fame than not likely. He's a guy who's a first team all decade, and you and I have had enough talk about those kind of accolades, how they resonate. And if this team wins multiple Super Bowls, somebody from the defense is going to go. It's not going to be all guys on the offense. So I'm probably a lot higher on Tyrann than I am on Tyreek. I think Tyreek's amazing. I think he's fantastic. But you know, being in that room, it's getting harder and harder for wide receivers to make the Hall of Fame. So maybe he makes it, but he has to do a lot more and keep building up his resume before I feel really good about him going in.
I go out on the record. I go on a limb. I think when it's all said and done from this team, Mahomes is going to make it. Reed is going to make it. Kelsey's going to make it. And those are ones you can take to the bank.
For sure.
And I feel really good about Honey Badger because he's all decade along with Travis Kelce, right? So, and then guess what? I mean, I think Tyreek Hill's case is going to end up being pretty good. Like 5 Pro Bowls already in his career. He's just 26. Guess what? He was all decade too. Okay. So that matters. Don't forget that matters. He's got 5 Pro Bowls, 3 first team all pros, albeit the first one, I think, maybe the second one was as a returner, but still, you know, I think Tyreek, here's another guy who loves the game and he's so gifted. You know, the question is, how is he going to hold up physically? I think if Hill puts together, you know, 2 or 3 more great seasons like this, you know, he'll be pretty safe to get in one day, especially with Mahomes and they win at this level. So
yeah.
The honest to God truth is that everybody's still got work to do, right? Like the only one that's like locked in, you know, really is Andy. And Kelce's probably okay, too, just after what he's done this year. But, like, you know, everyone's still got more work to do. But all these guys we just named, they're on the path. It would take, like, injuries getting in the way to keep, in my opinion, to keep these guys from having, like, really strong cases for me to put before the room. Now, it's going to take some guys longer than others, right? But I'm telling you, man, like, they keep winning like this, and Andy's a coach for a while, and Patrick stays here, and he's happy, and they keep this band together. You know, these guys are on a good path to getting to Canton one day. All of them are.
2-part question here, Therese, and we'll get you out of here. We appreciate your time. Eric Bieniemy I believe now he's interviewed for over 12 jobs the last three seasons. He hasn't at least officially been offered, not to our knowledge. What do you think is keeping Eric Bieniemy from a head coaching job? And do you think that he is the favorite right now in Houston?
You know, that's the question that everybody keeps asking and nobody really knows. So now we're at the point where people are coming up with stuff. And I actually just wrote a column on this. I'm about to tweet out, you know, is it like, does he interview poorly? I think all these guys get better with interviews with time. And now that this is his third year in this cycle, I have a hard time believing he's not interviewing much better, because you can tell like his delivery, even if it's press conferences, is a lot better. So I don't think that's legit right now. You wonder for something from his past. He had some arrests when he was a young coach and when he was a college player, but no coach is spotless. You know, some more than others, but you get what I'm saying. Like, you know, that stuff happened like two decades ago. So based on the stuff that we know that's public, we, you know, that doesn't really pass muster either, especially when guys still get jobs and they get hired, you know. You know, and then it's like, does he call plays? And honestly, that one's extremely insulting. Like the last two didn't call plays, and Nagy and Peterson. You know, I've always liked both those guys, you know, but, you know, it's been very clear Andy Reid is the one creating the game plans and stuff, but he does it with the help of his offensive coordinator, and their offensive coordinator sometimes calls some of the plays, like, but Andy is the final voice, as he should be. It is no different. The only difference, in theory, is no difference. The only difference is that Peterson and Nagy each had stretches the year before they went to become head coaches where they did call plays pretty outright because the team's offense was struggling so bad they needed to do something to get out of the funk. And we forget that now, but I just don't think it's fair that Eric is basically being punished because his offense is so doggone good. Andy doesn't need to switch it up by letting someone else call it for a few games. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like it's crazy. So I gave you the three main reasons that people kind of wonder, like, is it this or that? None of them really pass muster based on what we know that has come out about them, right? That leaves like one last thing, which is basically, you know, this is about relationships. People hire who they're comfortable with. You know, some guys just aren't connected to the right guys when there's certain jobs open. That's it. Like, look at the Lions coach, Dan Campbell, right? Guess what? Apparently him and Chris Spielman are pretty tight. Oh, Chris Spielman is the new assistant to Rod Wood, who's the CEO. You think that matters? You understand what I mean? So here's what I know, C-Dot. Yeah, I know this. You know, again, based on the stuff we know about Eric, he's going to continue to make sure that he does the best job he can and the job he has, and the Chiefs will be better for that now. Okay, but when the time comes for him to be a head coach somewhere, I think he'll be great. I think he'll be extremely motivated, and he will have put all this time waiting to good use to really have his program and what he wants to do with the job down pat. I don't think he's, you know, I don't think he's stressing. I think he's worried about doing his job to the best of his ability. And I think that's one of the things that best sums up Eric. So, you know, hopefully this ends. Like, you know, I'll be honest, you know, I mean, doesn't it get tiring talking about this? Like, it seems kind of crazy, right, guys? Like, are you guys tired of talking about it? Because it does seem unusual and strange that he does not have that opportunity.
I think the frustrating part for me is to what you said in the beginning. We keep trying to find these other reasons of why he's not being hired, but then when you ask the obvious question what the NFL has acknowledged as a problem when it comes to their hiring practice, like, well, no, that's not it. Well, hold on. Why can't we talk about that being it, but we can talk about the play calling? We can talk about all those other things. Like, why can't we examine the full spectrum of it? Where I asked a question a couple of days ago, and the text line was furious at me. Take somebody like who the Chargers just hired. Everybody told me that this Chargers job was one of the best jobs to come open. They got this great young quarterback, all this cap space. It's in L.A. I don't think Brandon Staley gets that job if he's black, just based on his resume. His resume is not overly impressive.
One great year as a coordinator, too? Like, that's the thing that's kind of messed up. Like, he's young, and I get that, you know. And actually, you know, I'm going to tell you this. You guys know I watch a lot of tape, man. His scheme is pretty good. You know, and he's a Vic Fangio, like, you know, protege. Like, I get it. But Then you put that against Bienemy, who's been a part of a great offense for the last 3 years, who's been a player in this league for 10 years, who was a coach in this league for 10 years, has coached in college. Like, Eric Bienemy's 50 years old. You know, he's really put in his time. So I'm with you, man. I hear you. Like, I'm with you. It feels like, to a lot of black coaches, I can tell you this, like, it feels like the goalposts just keep getting shifted, you know? You know, first it was, here come, oh, we got to find the next McVay, the young, hip offensive coach. You know, you got some offensive coaches now who are part of good teams. There's a couple people aren't even talking about, Carrington. Hey, guess what? Pep Hamilton, the quarterback coach for the Chargers, did a really good job with Justin Herbert this year. Here's another guy you've never heard of. Marcus Brady, the Indianapolis coach, quarterback coach. Marcus Brady was a quarterback in the CFL. He called plays in the CFL, and he's been a quarterback coach for the Colts for the last 3, 4, 5 years, I think. Phillip Rivers is ancient. He just retired. He actually had a pretty good season. So here are guys that should be getting some heat as, like, offensive coordinators and just nothing. Do you understand? Like, that's the frustrating part of it. And I'm sure there are people who are tired of hearing this, but, you know, I would encourage those people to think about how tired the coaches in the African-American community and minorities in this league are of talking about it, too, and having to worry about it and having to worry about being perfect or checking every single box when they feel that there are other coaches who get these jobs and they don't have to check every single box the way they do.
That is Terrez Paylor, one of the best NFL writers, reporters, and voices in the country. He does fantastic work for Yahoo Sports. Be on the lookout for his column with Stephon Diggs, Josh Allen, everything Buffalo. Thanks, Terrez.
Hey, I appreciate you guys. Thanks for the column ideas.
That is Terrez Paylor of Yahoo Sports joining us on the show. Coming up at the top of the hour, if you missed it, we had Ian Rappaport on the show earlier today. We will take out everything that he had to say about Patrick Mahomes and play that for you coming up at the top of the hour. Is the more and more people that we talk to, the more and more information and reports, I do think there's reasons to be really optimistic about Mahomes and his ability to play on Sunday for the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll do that coming up in a little bit. But before we do this, you remember last Wednesday we played a very simple game to test your knowledge of Cleveland Browns quarterbacks. I think you remember this show. It used to be called the 2-Minute Drill on ESPN, where you would answer all these questions, and then at the end, they would ask you one question of importance about a team or a year where you felt like you were your strongest. If you went on the show, I think 90s Kansas City Chiefs knowledge would be your thing. If they ask you a question about the 90s Kansas City Chiefs, you're dialed in. You're locked into those questions. So I went back and I studied the box score of the 1994 AFC Championship game between these Kansas City Chiefs and those Buffalo Bills. I have 5 questions to ask you. How many of these questions do you think you'll get right?
80%. I'll get 4.
Okay. So we're going to set the over-under at 3.5? Are we setting it at 4.5?
I mean, I've never been perfect at anything, so let's not make me go 5 for 5.
Okay, here. All right. So if you don't get 4 out of 5, we'll give a random caller a free pizza for my guys over at the other place.
Okay.
All right, that work?
Yeah.
Rob, hit my music.
Schottenheimer polka.
In the 1994 AFC Championship game, who was the kicker for the Kansas City Chiefs?
Oh, the kicker was Nick Lowry.
Nick Lowry was the kicker for your Kansas City Chiefs in the 1994 AFC title
game.
There's
at least 20 people listening right now that have the Leroy Neiman print on their wall still of Nick Lowry.
So the Chiefs ran the ball 20 times in this game. 18 carries went to Hall of Fame running back Marcus Allen. But 2 carries went to this 3-time Pro Bowl player who played his entire career in Kansas City. The Chiefs ran it 20 times. 18 went to Marcus Allen. 2 went to this 3-time Pro Bowl player who played his entire career for your Kansas City Chiefs.
Man, I was leaning early toward T. Rich, but he definitely didn't play his whole career in Kansas City. I mean, I guess I'll throw it against a wall and see if it sticks. Kimball Anders?
Kimball Anders is the correct answer. He did have 2 carries in the game.
The Pro Bowl is the most shocking stat there.
That's
what threw me off, too.
Three times.
That's what threw me off.
It was not Jim Kelly, nor Joe Montana, who had the most passing yards that day. Who did?
Actually, what did Dave Craig?
Dave Craig is the correct answer.
My guy, love me some Dave Craig.
You have to get these next two correct, or at least one of these next two, to avoid giving the phone lines a free pizza.
I'm feeling pretty good.
Having the same initials as the team, this wide receiver led the Chiefs in receiving this day with 6 catches for 87 yards.
Oh,
come on, that's easy.
Oh, yeah. Keith Cash?
Keith Cash?
Keith Casey, baby.
I mean, I wouldn't, if you didn't give me the initials thing, there's no way in hell I would have got that right. I would have said Willie Davis or anybody other than Keith Cash.
He actually came in third that day.
Is that
in receiving.
Right?
He did come in third that day.
How did Burden do that day? Unless that's the last question. I apologize.
Hold on. Let me pull up the numbers.
I love J.J. Burden.
Hold on. Let me pull it up here. My apologies here. I didn't
J.
know you
J.
were going to ask additional questions other than the ones that I
He cooked that so fast. I got follow-ups.
I love every Chiefs wide receiver from that era that wasn't really that good. Johnny Morton, wasn't he here for a cup of coffee?
Lake Dawson.
Oh, I love Lake Dawson. He was on this team. I'm pretty sure Lake Dawson was on this team we're talking about.
I don't think he's on the team. I don't see him certainly in the score
This was
books,
definitely
least.
His wheelhouse. He was like early 90s, 94, 95.
So Keith Cash had 6 catches for 87 yards. J.J. Burden had 4 catches for 60 yards. Willie Davis had 5 catches for 57 yards in the game. Danon Hughes had a catch in that game, 1 catch for 11 yards.
Bet it was a big one, though. Probably got a first down.
He also had a punt return.
He also had a punt return in the game. Last question here. No one wins the pizza. This was the offensive line. Right tackle, Ricky Ziegler. Right guard, Will Shields. At center, Tim Grunhard. John Ault played left tackle. Who played left guard for the Kansas City Chiefs?
Give me the ones you had again.
John Ault was at left tackle.
Uh-huh.
Tim Grunhard was at center.
Yeah.
Will Shields was at right guard. Ricky Ziegler was at right tackle. Who was the left guard that day for your Kansas City Chiefs?
Come on, bro. Are you serious? I have absolutely no was it Dave Zott?
Dave Zott.
Okay. That's why you step into my wheelhouse.
Dave Zott was the left guard that day for the Kansas City Chiefs.
I would have picked either that as my final question on 2-minute drill or the KU basketball team that had Paul Pierce, Rafe LaFrenne, Jacques Vaughn, Jared Haas, and Scott Pollard. Those are I know more about those two teams than I do my own family.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we had Ian Rappaport of NFL Network on the show. We will play everything that he had to say about Patrick Mahomes' injury. You'll want to hear it. Stick around. It's The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, the official broadcast partner of the Kansas City Chiefs.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.